Welcome into Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I'd like to bring in a very special guest of mine, Bryant Knox. And right before we do that, I want to give a quick shout out to the band Liebecker, who are from the Northwest and provide music for the show. If you haven't checked them out, please do so at www.liebeckermusic.com. Great band with great sound. Please check them out. They do great stuff for the show. I'm really excited to have them on board. So back to my superstar co-host, Bryant. Bryant, how are you doing tonight?
Casey, yeah, I'm great. 2 weeks in a row. What is this? You're spoiling me.
I'm the one that feels spoiled. I've got a superstar co-host 2 weeks in a row. You know, I've had you from OSN on. I've had Garrett, and you know, who knows who will be on next. I hope to get Garrett back next week, and hopefully you back next week. We've got the NBA draft that's going to be in front of everybody's eyes and ears, and I'm really excited to talk to some local folks about that, and I'm hoping you can be one of them. Definitely Garrett, who is one of our resident Blazer experts. But it's awesome to have you on. You've got a really unique take on sports and a really fun take. And I'm excited to have you be a part of this show. So thank you again for coming on.
I definitely appreciate it. If we happen to make it 3 weeks in a row and we happen to get Garrett on board, that's fantastic. I will feel even more spoiled. But regardless, I'm definitely happy to be on board with you.
Well, let's get into tonight's topics, and we'll definitely talk draft next week. But this week is all about recapping the finals that happened so long ago, you know, almost 2 days ago. It's just ridiculous how long ago that was. You know, in a different world a week ago, we would have been looking forward to game 6 or 7 later this week. But instead, here we are looking back on game 5 and before that. So what's your initial reaction? You know, did you think it played out the way it was going to? Did you get surprised by anything? What did you see?
You know, I don't mean to brag. You know, Kendrick Lamar told me to sit down, be humble. but the truth is, this series went exactly 100% the way I thought it would.
Well, that's good.
Legitimately thought that the Warriors would jump out to a 3-0 lead, and then the Cavaliers would be desperate enough to come away with a win at home. Now, they did it in historic fashion as far as their offense is concerned, which I didn't expect. You know, I didn't expect them to set NBA Finals records during that, but they were desperate enough, which is what I thought they were going to be, and they came out with a win. And then, just like I thought, the internet absolutely ran with the idea that the Cavaliers were going to force the Warriors to become the first team to blow a 3-0 lead the year after blowing a 3-1 lead. I don't know if you check out NBA Reddit very often, but it was absolutely blowing up with fans who thought that they were going to blow a 3-0 lead. Twitter was running with that idea. And then, just like I thought, Game 5 came around. The Warriors won convincingly, and they finally got that championship trophy presentation in front of their own crowd, which they'd been, you know, craving ever since 2015 when they won it on the Cavaliers court.
Way back in 2015.
And then in 2016, when the Cavs won it on their home court, it was just too poetic to not end up this way. And, you know, I follow the NBA as a business, and so I love the narratives and the storylines that come out of it. So for me, I guess it was mostly just hopeful thinking and wishful thinking that it would turn out this way, but it did turn out exactly as I expected.
Well, that's good, because the rest of the world, myself included, we got it wrong, and I mean really wrong. We thought this was going to be the series that would make a really lackluster playoffs pay off, and we're going to see a great fight between two teams fighting for the second championship in a round of three, and instead we got this, which was an entertaining series for a few games, but on the whole, I think this is one that you kind of forget and move on with your life.
Yeah. Don't blame you for that. I think that most of us, myself included, wanted to see a ultra competitive series. You know, when we talk about some of the greatest finals that we have ever personally watched, a few come to mind for me. Michael Jordan hitting the shot over Byron Russell after maybe or maybe not pushing off in 1998. I loved when the modern day Kobe Bryant Lakers took down the modern day Big Three plus Rajon Rondo Celtics. I really, really, truly did enjoy some of the LeBron Miami Heat finals, especially the one where Ray Allen hit the big shot from the corner. But as far as all-time great finals go, I really thought that last year's LeBron coming back down 3-1, getting the block on Iguodala in Game 7, I thought that was one of the greatest finals that I had ever personally seen. So I'm right there with you that I wanted this year to live up to that. I wanted it to make up for the lack of parity throughout the playoffs this postseason. But I just also had an understanding of how historically great the Golden State Warriors are, and I just didn't see them, you know, flopping or even winning in anything less than five. And so, yes, I got it right. Do I wish I got it right? There's a little bragging rights to it that I'll certainly claim. But on the other hand, I kind of wish that it had gone seven games. Had the Cavaliers come back from 0-3 to force a game seven, that would have been unreal. And the storylines, which I already talked about that I appreciate, would have been great. But like I said, I'm right there with you. A little bit of bragging rights along the way.
Fair enough. On to the MVP race in the series. Do you think Kevin Durant wins it, whether the Cavs push the game to a seven-game series and win the series? Or do you think LeBron wins? Did it come down to whether LeBron or Kevin Durant were on the winning side to win the MVP in this series?
Yeah, it really did. You know, I was actually a major proponent of LeBron James winning the MVP in 2015.
Yep.
I certainly don't have a finals MVP vote.
Nor do I.
If I did, my vote would have honestly gone to LeBron James in 2015. I know Andre Iguodala kind of proved to be the glue guy, and so that's why he won it in a year where Stephen Curry maybe didn't perform at his top level, and Draymond Green hadn't quite emerged as the player that we know him to be now. LeBron would have gotten my vote that year, despite being in a loss. This year, though, it was always going to be Kevin Durant or LeBron James. I mean, LeBron James averaged, you know, I can't, who said it? It was Steve Kerr or Kyrie Irving. They said, the dude averaged a freaking triple-double.
Right.
I mean, that says it all. The dude averaged a freaking triple-double in the finals for the first time in NBA history. And so he was obviously up there, and we talked last week about how the actual definition of MVP, meaning the most valuable player, meaning you take him off that team and they are significantly worse.
Right.
LeBron wins it every time, and so I do think that there's a case to be made for him this year, even in a loss. But it always did come down to who wins versus who lost. Because the two players involved here, Kevin Durant and LeBron James, were so spectacular that if the other team lost, you had to give it to the winning party. And in this case, it was Kevin Durant who basically exercised his demons and vindicated his decision to leave. And, you know, we also talked last week about how you can choose to not like his decision to leave, but regardless of your opinion, debate the fact that he was a phenomenal player in a phenomenal team. And yes, it was always going to come down to one of the two. And the fact that the Warriors won in such convincing fashion, I have no problem with Durant winning it.
Well, and then you kind of touched on that LeBron probably deserved to be in the conversation, at least for winning the 2015 MVP. He did win MVP last year, after having a ridiculous stat line where he led the entire finals, I think, in points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. I mean, something crazy like that. You know, we see that every year. It's totally normal. But should he have gotten more than one MVP in this trilogy, or are you okay with him only getting one?
I'm okay with him only getting one, basically based off the historical precedent. You know, the last loser to win a, and I hate to use the word loser because it sounds worse than it
is. We'll say runner-up.
We'll say runner-up. The last runner-up to win a Finals MVP was Jerry West. You know, Jerry West nowadays is probably more known on Twitter as far as the younger generation is concerned,
right,
as the old gray dude who congratulated Kevin Durant after his most recent Finals MVP. And I'm not saying that's right, but I am saying that that's kind of what it is, in the sense that it was a long time ago that a player on a losing team or a runner-up team won Finals MVP. So am I okay with LeBron only winning one? Yes, I'm okay with it. I don't have an issue. I'm not going to make a big fuss over it. Time? Like I said, my vote in 2015, had I had one, would have gone to LeBron. So if we reverse the question and we say, are you disappointed or are you okay with the idea that LeBron maybe had two? I'm good with that.
Okay. I'm good with that. Quick question before we move on to our next topic. Do you think most kids on Twitter understand that Jerry West is the logo? Do you think they know that?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the fact that there was a Photoshop competition this NBA season to create the new NBA logo. And I understand that that started when Jerry West himself said, I don't want to be the logo.
Right.
I don't know all the context for that. I think it's kind of wild, you know, if I were the logo, I'd be stoked about being the logo.
It would probably be me
chugging a bottle of water because I'm so exhausted I can't get in the game, or maybe me stumbling over my own feet trying to do a reverse layup. So the logo wouldn't quite be as appealing as it is now. But if I were the logo, I'd be all about it. So I don't quite understand the context of that he doesn't want to be the logo. That said, he is the logo. I don't think many people, as far as today's younger Twitter generation is concerned, understands that, which is why I mentioned, you know, him embracing Kevin Durant, because I saw that on the ABC coverage, and I legitimately wondered to myself, how many people watching this game, you know, 23 and under, 21 and under, even know that the man talking to Kevin Durant right now is the logo? I had the same thought when they did the Bill Russell Finals yep. MVP trophy presentation. But how many people understand that the man handing the trophy to Kevin Durant is right there with LeBron James when it comes to people having made the finals consecutive years in a row? There's an entirely different debate that we could do an entire podcast on, as far as, you know, the disparity between the younger generation and the older generation. And I probably fall somewhere in between, so I'm not trying to necessarily, you know, take a side here. I think I kind of am inherently, but I'm trying not to.
Right.
But I think that, you know, the Twitterverse could use some education, and nothing wrong with that. It comes with the times, and I'll stop talking because I'm making myself feel even older now.
Careful, Bryant, because if you talk like that, you take away all this good work they did getting this really neat guy named Paul McCartney a music career. Without them, he'd be nowhere.
Paul McCartney, that's the guy that did the hit with Kanye West.
Yeah, Kanye just launched his career out of nowhere. It was amazing. We need to thank the Twitterverse for that. So they may not know who Jerry West is, but man, they can spot music talent.
I love it.
All right. So we'll get back into that topic another time. That's definitely a podcast topic all on its own. Moving along with some finals in review. If you saw the Cleveland we saw in games 3, 4, and 5 across a 7-game series, A, do you think they could beat the Warriors in that 7-game series? And do you think that they could do you think they could beat them, and would you want to watch another round of this battle, or is the trilogy enough?
I'm fine with the rivalry continuing. That said, I hope that other teams, you know, step in. You know, at this point, we kind of need to put the onus on the rest of the NBA to challenge these guys. LeBron James, part of this all, I mean, you could point to, you know, the Boston Celtics trading for Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. you can point to many other teams that had, you know, even the San Antonio Spurs. I know it was an organic growth, but they had their own big three that they kind of ran with for so many years. The same story, but it is sort of a continuation of the same story when you talk about LeBron James creating these super teams and so on and so forth. So this is on the NBA to keep up with the times. And so the Warriors have done that with LeBron James. They have done what they needed to do. And for that reason, I'm okay watching this rivalry evolve. I'm okay watching this NBA Finals continue next year and beyond if needed. I do think it would be good for the NBA if, you know, if the Toronto Raptors made a move or the Boston Celtics were to get Jimmy Butler or Paul George to really truly compete with the Cavaliers, if the Spurs were to have a healthy Kawhi Leonard and potentially challenge those Warriors, I think that those types of things would be good for the competitive balance of the NBA. That said, if those teams that I just mentioned don't make those moves or don't have those factors on their side, then yes, I'm absolutely fine with seeing the Warriors and the Cavs again next season and beyond, because to me, you don't want to watch change just for the sake of change. You know, if we had the Milwaukee Bucks and I don't know, the even a team that was good like the Houston Rockets, if you had that finals matchup this year, it would have tanked in the NBA TV ratings. But the fact is, the ratings this year had the highest ratings since the 1998 finals featuring Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan and the Utah Jazz and Karl Malone and John Stockton. So to me, there's no particular reason to wish for change unless the teams put it on themselves to truly challenge the top tier.
Do you think if we got a healthy Kawhi Leonard in the Western Conference Finals through the whole series, do you think Golden State still wins that series, or are they in trouble?
Yeah, I think they still win. I think it probably goes, I mean, I don't mean to like discredit what Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs do, but I think it's probably a 5-game series, 6 games at best. I know that Kawhi Leonard had when Kawhi Leonard was healthy, they had, I think, a 25-point lead in that game one. But the Spurs also had a massive lead at one point against the Warriors in the regular season, and they blew it to lose the game. So I'm not of the mindset that him being healthy changes the outcome of the series. I certainly think it changes the competitiveness of the series. But to me, the Warriors still win in 5 or 6 games.
Well, we'll circle back to a similar topic at the end of the show because I want to get your opinion on some hypotheticals there. But it'll involve some sorcery, of course, because everything I talk about does. But let's move on to our next topic. You talked about what other teams might have to do to get up to Golden State's level. So let's talk about our hometown team, the Blazers, and talk about where they are in terms of competing with Golden State or even Cleveland. Let's say they somehow get past the Western Conference and into the Western Conference Finals and then beyond to the Finals. Can they compete with these two teams? How far away are they?
They're a ways away. It's the reason I hesitate is because it's difficult right now not knowing what an entire year of Jusuf Nurkić looks like. I need to see what Nurkić and McCollum and Lillard look like together before I can really make a decision on that.
Well, and you've potentially got 3 incoming draft picks as well.
Yeah, if you ask me, and this is, like you said, we'll get into this more next week, but if you ask me, there's no physical way the Blazers end up with 3 draft picks from the first round on their roster next year. I think they either trade up, trade out, or draft and stash with 1 or 2 of those picks. But I think that I need to see a whole year of Portland's big 3 or know what it's dealing with. But I also need to see what Neil Olshey does with the contract situation. You know, the Trailblazers have absolutely no room for free agents.
Right.
We knew that coming into this year. We knew that coming into this offseason. The big question is, is Olshay able to turn one or two or three of those contracts into a trade bargain with a team that has a disgruntled star? Now, the prime example is DeMarcus Cousins or Paul George. I'm not saying the Blazers get either of those guys. I am saying that Olshay has to look to turn his current contracts into one of those types of players. You know, maybe you take a Myers Leonard and a Mo Harkless and a third pick and turn it into a second-tier star who's not happy where he is. Exactly what Olshay is doing with all of his current assets. There's no way to really say how close the Blazers can get to a Warriors or a Cavs. That the Warriors and the Cavs are the top tier. The next tier down is the Rockets and the Spurs and the Celtics and probably the Raptors or Wizards. The Blazers are even a step behind that as they currently stand.
So then if it's tough for the Blazers to get there, and I think you're right, that it's not only are they a year or two away, but they're a couple pieces away as well. You know, a lot of people say just let's see what happens with the guys we have, and I've never been a big fan of that. I think you look at all the teams that are competing, they've all made moves and brought in pieces or moved pieces around, and they haven't stayed with what they have. And I think that's a really important way to go about it, because this NBA thing is always changing. It's a different animal every year, and I don't think you can just stand pat. I agree with you that you got to see what your big three are doing and how they're going to cooperate over the course of a whole season and coexist. I liked what I saw in the month of March, what little view I got. But what are they going to do next year? Is Nurkic going to stay healthy? Is Lillard going to stay healthy? They both have injury concerns in their past. So does McCollum. Can they all three be healthy come playoff time? That's a really big question mark. And then conversely, on the Golden State side, you have Durant, who's shown a proneness to injury. You've got Curry, who's definitely been injury prone throughout his career. And those are definitely their two most important pieces. So I'm not necessarily sold that those guys are going to be around for the finals next year or the year after. They've got to get over the injury bug. They're going to get bit of sooner or later. And they're going to have some huge contracts to deal with. Their big four is amazing, but they're also going to be very, very expensive. They're writing out early contracts for three of their best four players right now. Sooner or later, they're going to have to deal one of those guys, and it's going to be interesting to see which one they deal. And then the bigger question is that, can Portland get in on some of that? Can they bring in a Klay Thompson or a Draymond Green? And, you know, take some wind out of the sails of their biggest opponent and their biggest rival? Or do they go and get some homegrown talent like Golden State did and then eventually bring in a free agent? Because until the last couple of years, free agents didn't want to go to Golden State anymore than they wanted to go to Portland, I wouldn't say. So I'd be curious to see what Portland could do with a winning record and some star power here and some fight in them. And then after that, get in a guy like a Paul George or a Paul Millsap or, you know, somebody that's a savvy veteran that can help this team get over the hump.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of parallels between Portland and Golden State. I know that fans in Oakland and fans across the NBA won't necessarily want to recognize that. Fans in Portland, honestly, might want to recognize it a little too much. But the fact is, Golden State grew its team fairly organically. It wasn't until they traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut that they really became a competitor.
Right.
At least as far as, you know, the top tier is concerned. And even then, they were a step below that. But I don't know if you remember, but the crowd during a jersey retirement booed the owner and Chris Mullin. And they booed because they had just traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut. And ended up becoming one of the most essential pieces for that initial Warriors run. Now, I think as far as Portland is concerned, you can grow your team very similarly to the way that the Warriors did, and then you can make that one move that maybe it's not even a Paul George. Maybe it's a move that is under the radar, things up just enough to add a new dynamic to your team. I think Portland can get there. Convinced that it necessarily has the pieces to organically grow while make that one trade to really put them at Golden State's level. Like you said, as the team starts to win, the free agents will come. You know, there's no denying that. I think that Portland has a disadvantage in the free agency market, as does many teams. But the truth is, if you win more, you're more appealing to free agents. And so there's certainly something to that. I'm just not convinced that Portland is even one step away from becoming that destination. I think it's at least two steps away as far as both organic growth and Neil Olshay kind of working his magic.
Yeah, and I think there's absolutely some truth to that because, you know, as long as 10 to 15 years ago, nobody would have wanted to go to Golden State. And 20 or 25 years ago, no one would have wanted to go to San Antonio. I'm not saying Portland fans should wait 2-3 decades for free agents to want to come here. But I think that's the reality, that you have to build an empire over time. You're not going to be an overnight empire. You got to build the pieces and build the pieces. And the more you can do that organically, the more you can be in a situation that you are in Golden State, where you have bird rights to your players, whereas in Cleveland, you have the opposite, where you have aging veterans that you don't own and you have aging superstars that you don't really own. You know, Kevin Love, they don't have the bird rights to. They don't have the bird rights to LeBron James anymore, I don't believe, because he went away as a free agent. So it gets really spendy come contract time. And the opposite is true in Golden State, where three of your four biggest stars you drafted in your hometown. So if Portland can stay the course and trust the process, I think they can definitely get a really good team here. And then once they win some playoff series with the guys they have, as long as they're young enough, you can get free agents to come in and want to play alongside those guys.
I love the trust the process reference, by the way.
Thank you.
Sam Hinkie forever.
Yes, sir. So then on that note of sticking with the process and trusting the culture around you, and in fact changing it for the positive, you have a captain and a ringleader and Damian Lillard who has definitely built that culture here and believes in his teammates, and his teammates believe in him. And he has voiced on numerous occasions that he not only wants to stay in Portland, but he wants to stay here whether or not he wins a title, that he'd rather put his whole career here than say, I'll win a title here or I'll go somewhere else. How much do you buy into that? Do you think that's him just making people comfortable after LaMarcus Aldridge left, after giving a similar words of wisdom, or do you think that's Damian Lillard's real perspective and that's what he's going to do and he's going to stand behind his words?
That's a two-part answer for me, and I think really it's actually more of a one-and-a-half-part answer, because the first part is that, like, no, I don't think it's, you know, him putting on a face. I think that he's built a culture here that puts him really ahead of a LaMarcus Aldridge in as far as his legacy goes within the franchise. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge said at one point he wanted to be the greatest trailblazer of all time.
Yep.
But even when he said it, it felt like a PR move. It felt channeled through the media. Nothing about it felt organic. Now, at the time, nobody was saying that, of course, but it felt as if he was doing this because he knew his free agency was coming up. Damian Lillard has jumped on Twitter, and he's one of the more active guys on Twitter. If you're not following him, by the way, shame on you.
Yeah.
You have to follow this guy on Twitter. I swear every other week he has a Warriors fan or a Lakers fan recruiting him to Oakland or LA, and he is constantly shutting them down. Now, again, what else is he going to do? He's not going to say, sure, let me sign up in 5 years. I'll meet you there. He's not going to do that. No player in the NBA would do that. But his interactions with
Nick Young might.
He might. you're right about that.
But most guys wouldn't, though.
As far as Lillard is concerned, I feel like he's a guy who's going to really, truly speak his mind. And he's talked a lot about loyalty. You know, he has this, I don't know if you're into the Dame Dala rap career, but he has a song called Loyal to the Soil. It's actually featuring Lil Wayne. It's very good. If you've never heard it, throw it on your Spotify for the 3.5 or 4 minutes that it is. It's a good listen. But he has a song called Loyal to the Soil. If you want to translate that to the NBA, you know, Oakland fans are going to say, oh, he's loyal to the soil that he came from. he's loyal to Oakland. He's going to come back and put the Warriors. But as far as Trailblazers fans are concerned, they're going to say he's loyal to the soil that drafted him. You know, I had the opportunity and the pleasure of interviewing Damian Lillard just a few weeks after he was drafted, when he had signed with Adidas. I met up with him at the Adidas Village in Portland at the Adidas World Headquarters. And, you know, I asked him a whole bunch of questions. It was a good interview, good talk. But one of the questions that I asked him was admittedly a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I asked him, you know, hey, by, you know, big-time college programs 2 years into your college career, and you chose to stay at Weber State because you felt a loyalty to the team that took a chance on you. My follow-up question was, do you feel that same loyalty to Portland, having taken a chance on you at number six, despite you being a four-year kid out of a small school? And he answered very honestly. He looked me square in the eye. He laughed a little bit. He said, I can't answer that right now, but I hope that I do have that relationship with Portland, that it eventually comes to that, where I have that loyalty there. I think that was a very honest answer, and I truly believe, you know, he hasn't kept my question in mind, but he has kept his answer in mind and his general mentality, because I think that, unlike a Kevin Durant, who in 2010 pointed out how everyone was signing with the Lakers or the Heat, cough, cough, LeBron James.
Right.
And then actually cough, cough, Kevin Durant 7 years later. I think that Damian Lillard has spoken from the heart, and that there's nothing false about what he's saying now. The big question is that still going to be his mentality after his first max contract is up and he has the ability to sign with the contender? I do worry about that a little bit, but I also think that he has an understanding of what he's built in Portland in such a short time. And I think that he understands how much he's done for the franchise. And I do truly believe that he values that the way he does now. 5 years from now, he'll still be here at the end of his career.
Yeah, I think he will be. And I really think that he values leadership and honesty and integrity and trust and loyalty the same way that you and I do. And I think that at the end of the day, he'd rather be here and be a man of his word than bolt for a team where he can join a super team and get a ring the Frankenstein way. And I would love to see him win one here. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen, because we just keep kind of missing on these big opportunities. And one of those, you know, you brought up Kevin Durant, and one of the things we missed out on was drafting Kevin Durant back in 2008. And this is kind of an important question for a lot of Blazers fans, is did that sting to watch him win a ring with another team when he could have been playing here this whole time?
To me, it didn't sting even a little bit. It was tougher to watch him make the finals in 2012. Because he was still with Oklahoma City, which was the team that drafted him, you know, or it was the franchise that drafted him. Obviously, it was Seattle originally. But in 2012, we had to watch him go up against LeBron James for the first time. Everyone was talking about how Kevin Durant was trying not to be a number two anymore. He was always trying to be the number one. There was even a Nike commercial about it. And it was the former Pacific Northwest team that made it there with him. To me, that was tougher because it was sort of a what could have been situation. Now, you have two major factors here at play that tell me, no, I'm not too concerned about this. One, he defected, right? Would he have defected from Portland and gone to Golden State, or whatever team ended up being great because of the butterfly effect that landed him in Portland? There's that question that would he even still be here anyway? So no, I'm not concerned for that reason. But also, in further hindsight, and I guess, you know, 2012 was 5 years after the fact anyway, but 2007, there's really only one team that would have passed on Greg Oden, and that was probably the Orlando Magic, because they had a Dwight Howard in his prime, ready to compete for championships, perennial all-star, superstar. to me, nowadays, at this point, 10 years later, and it is an entire decade later, as we come up on the draft, I have really no ill will toward Durant or the Greg Oden situation. Oden, it would have been nice. It would have been partly nice to see him win a title, but also it would have been a little bit bitter, you know, if you're thinking back to his days with Miami. But the fact is, I'm not too worried about that comparison at this point because it is what it is, and probably 28 or 29 other teams would have done the exact same thing.
Absolutely, and you know, I think it would have been a lot more brutal to watch Greg Oden win a championship than it is to watch Kevin Durant, especially since Kevin Durant's such a down-to-earth good guy. I don't think we have any problem with him winning. Not to say Greg Oden's not a good guy or down to earth, but I think he just, his time in Portland was a little bit, I don't want to say bitter, but I think that we all kind of walked away from that not feeling like we accomplished what we should have. And that's kind of a good segue into a different topic you and I discussed about, is there a team in Portland that you think has not really won the way they should have, that was built to win, built to last, built to be a title contender, and just didn't come up and win when it counted?
Well, I think the Greg Oden teams, the early Greg Oden teams, are probably the only example, if I'm being completely honest. You know, the 2007, 2008, 2009 teams, you know, after Greg Oden was drafted and you had a couple years under LaMarcus Aldridge and Brandon Roy, that's a team, I don't have it up in front of me, but that's a team that went for 50-plus wins. And I feel like had that team blossomed and had that team actually grown to its true potential, it is a second to third round, you know, Western Conference team as far as that conference is concerned during that age. But I think that, you know, most people, when you think about Portland teams that had a championship makeup that didn't live up to its potential, I think most people are going to think about the 2000 team that had a 15-point lead in the Western Conference Finals. To me,
in Game 7 in the fourth quarter.
In Game 7 of the fourth quarter, to me,
nightmares.
That's not a team that didn't live up to its potential. That's a team that flopped in the moment, which is a bummer. But that in and of itself says that that current Lakers iteration was better. And so if you're going to talk, and I know that there's all the scandal with the referee and the rigging of the game. I'm not trying to get into that. I know that it's part of the discussion.
Right.
But to me, you had
what happened happened. We're just reporting it. Just, it happened.
To me, that team was great as it was, and it did have a championship makeup. But it flopped in the moment, and the Lakers proved to be better. So I feel like that 2000 Trailblazers team did live up to its potential, even if its potential was just half a step under a championship level.
100% agree. And, you know, the team that I think of when I think of a team that was built to last and built to win, that should have won a title and never got one, was probably 2010 Portland Trailblazers, probably the same time frame you're talking about. Right smack dab in the middle of Brandon Roy, Greg Oden, LaMarcus Aldridge, Marcus Camby, Steve Blake. You know, we had Rudy Fernandez. I mean, it was a pretty deep team and a really talented team, and I was really surprised that they didn't win even a couple playoff series, let alone get to the finals. But the talent they had was just tremendous, and I'm really hoping that Portland can put together a team like that again. I'm hopeful that next year will be that way with Nurkic and McCollum and Lillard. And then you've got some really talented role players with Mo Harkless and Alan Crabb. And, you know, if Myles Leonard comes back, and then these three draft picks that we can get something out of. It's an exciting time to be a Blazer fan. I'm hoping that this will be a year that we look back on as a time where they really started pushing the envelope and getting up to the elite level and not just standing pat. And speaking of not standing pat, I've got two more questions to ask you before we sign off for the night. We've only got a couple of minutes left because we're approaching the 40-minute mark of the show. But if you could put LeBron on any team in the West, and you don't have to worry about salary, and you don't have to worry about moving guys out so you can move him in, you're just going to plant him on a team with magic and sorcery like we talked about earlier, But the only caveat is this team can no longer make any further moves this season. They get LeBron and that's it. They can't draft a guy. They can't trade for a guy. They can't get a free agent. You're basically just planting him on a current roster. Is there a team in the West other than Golden State that you could put him on to build a new super team in the West?
Well, LeBron is so ridiculous that you could probably put him on 6 or 7 different Western Conference teams, and this conversation still applies. But to me, it's pretty obviously the Spurs
yep.
or the Clippers,
mm-hmm.
Just because of their current roster makeups. I think that the Rockets deserve to be a part of this conversation as well, just because of how well they played this year. Depending on how you view it, maybe how much they overachieved. I think that James Harden did tremendous things as a de facto point guard, if not a newfound permanent point guard. But you put him on the Clippers, a team that has basically been only missing one piece for the last 4 or 5 years, and that is small forward.
You've got three top 20 players. You're doing pretty good.
Three top 20 players, and the only thing they're missing is a small forward, and you add LeBron James. Yeah, absolutely. They
can that could work.
With the Warriors at that point. But I think maybe even ahead of that team, you know, maybe it's a neck-and-neck situation here, but you put him on the Spurs just because of their system, their discipline, their Kawhi Leonard, and...
Kawhi Leonard's now a verb, people.
Yes.
Or an adjective, I mean.
But because Kawhi is a small forward, I think, you know, potentially you maybe put LeBron as a permanent power forward.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about that last week.
Yeah, I think it's a good move.
And how the Cavs this finals did not utilize LeBron in the post nearly as much as they should have. And I think that as LeBron's career goes on, he's going to rely on his post game even more, which is not to say that he's going to downgrade his game, because he's proven he can be a fantastic, legitimate power forward in the past. But I think that if you put him on that team, and I'm hesitant to say they challenge the Warriors right away. I think that because of LeBron's greatness, they probably do. But realistically, give them one season under Popovich to figure out who plays power forward, who plays center, who plays small forward, and, you know, is Tony Parker healthy enough to be your point guard? I think you give them 1 year, and they are hands down the favorite just because of that talent combination, but within the system as well.
Hey, you sold me on the idea. I'm all for it. I hope it happens. I know that wasn't your topic, but, you know, at the end of the, you know, I didn't really buy into it in the beginning, but you sold me on it. I think that if he goes to San Antonio now, they're the team to contend, and I would love to see a 7-game series in the playoffs between those two.
It's probably not likely that it's going to happen, but the Spurs aren't too far away from adding someone like a Chris Paul.
They're really not.
If you're talking, you know, a team, an elite team like the Spurs looking to make that elite jolt up there to compete with the Warriors, nah, they're probably not going to get LeBron James, but they might have the next best option as far as potential free agents are concerned over the next year or two. So who knows? Maybe we could be having this discussion a little more, you know, realistically and a little more in the moment. If Chris Paul happens to, you know, get that meeting that a lot of people are saying he's going to get with the Spurs in the next couple weeks.
All right, we'll look forward to that. We're down to 1 minute or less, so you're going to have to think fast here, because I'm going to throw a real zinger at you.
All right, let me hear.
All right, you can be one NBA player in any point in history for one game and one game only. What player are you picking, and what game are you playing?
I kind of want to be Bonzi Wells during the game that he flipped someone off in the Triple H Arena.
You can do that anytime. You can just go there.
You're right. I've done that 17 times. What am I talking about? Honestly, I kind of want to be Damian Lillard during the shot against Houston.
That'd be huge.
Just because that was the first time the team had made the second round in 14 years, and the entire city just rallied around him in that moment. He talked after the game about how, you know, he's been at gunpoint in Oakland. He has faced adversity his entire life. He is not afraid of a big shot, but at the same time, I guarantee you he loves making a big shot.
Oh, yeah.
So off the top of my head, I might have to appease to the hometown crowd and go with that.
That's an excellent answer. I hadn't even thought of that. You know, I was thinking of these amazing NBA Finals performances throughout the ages. You know, how cool would it be to be Bill Russell for a day and shut down Wilt Chamberlain, or be Magic Johnson going against Larry Bird or vice versa? But to drill the game winner with less than a second to go, I think it was, what, 9 clicks on the clock. And, you know, everyone thought this Houston series is going back to Houston. Here we go, game 7, oh no. And instead, Damian Lillard just lights up the scoreboard for one last time to move them on. And that's a huge moment, arguably one of the biggest in Portland's history, you know, aside from the winning the title. But that might be the only other one I would want to do if I were doing a Portland game, is I'd want to be Bill Walton for one day in game 6 of the 77 series and know what it felt like to win Portland's championship.
Yeah, you know, the next thing that came to mind for me was Reggie Miller in New York with the 8 points in, 8.9 seconds or yeah, something like that. But being Bill Walton for a day and winning the championship and ripping your shirt off and automatically going up to the streets of Portland and riding your bike with no shirt on, that sounds pretty good too.
It sounds like it could happen today. So, it, you know, does. He was the original hipster.
Was.
All right. Well, we're way past time, so we got to go. But Bryant, absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Definitely have you back if you're available next week or the week after. We definitely want to talk some draft with you and free agency. So thank you again for being a part of this, and we'll look to you again in the future for sure.
Thank you, Casey. I'll be here.
All right. Well, that's Bryant Knox. I'm Casey Mabbitt. We're signing off for Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. If you haven't checked out sports, please do so. They're awesome. And if you haven't checked out Liebecker, check them out. They're at www.liebeckermusic.com. Thank you and good night.